Welcome to Recovery Stories Yukon. The purpose of this podcast is to break stigmas, bring hope, and show that recovery is possible within our communities. Today on the podcast, Kiri will be sharing her story. She's from Dawson City, 36 years old, and 13 plus years sober. Welcome, Kiri.
Will you please take us from your first drink to your last?
When I first started drinking, I would say I was 13 years old, and I didn't understand what it could possibly lead into being at a young age. I didn't know about addiction. I didn't really know about recovery. It wasn't really normalized, and I'm happy to say that I am 13 years sober today. I'll be 13 years sober actually in February. It's been a long journey, but I would never go back.
And when you had your first drink at 13, do you remember the way that it made you feel?
Yeah. It made me feel powerful. It made me feel like I belonged. It made me feel like I had a lot of confidence, and that's what I struggled with.
And when you were growing up, was there a lot of drinking in your home?
When I was younger, both my parents drank, but my mom is sober. She's got sober, I think, when I was like 4 or 5. I can't remember because I was so young. And with like distant uncles and grandmas, there was drinking, but I would say my parents sheltered us very well from all of that and not having it directly a part of our lives. To be honest, like through my teenager years, I didn't like drinking. Mm-hmm. I did it just to be a part of a group. I did it to be, felt like I belonged to somewhere. I didn't start drinking heavily until I had my first really long-term, I'd say, relationship breakup. I was living in Vancouver at the time. I would say I went down a really, really dark path. And knowing how low I went, I'd never want to go back to that place. When addiction and drinking doesn't also, it also encompasses the use of drugs. So I found my confidence through using also other drug substances, not just alcohol. And I felt it gave me a new outlook on life. But the feeling that I had afterwards, the depression and anxiety that I felt, was the trigger to me. And I dealt with a lot of depression because I was really depressed, but then anxiety, and it was just a whole encompass of things, of partying and going out every weekend, going out on the week. I started losing focus on school, and my parents really could feel that and felt that I was lost. And thankfully I had like a good group of solid friends down in Vancouver who actually kind of stepped in and helped me to find a pathway of healing. So I took it's called Landmark Education, which is focused on CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, and that really helped me deal with my past issues of like my relationship breakup, issues with my dad not feeling loved or belonged.
But through that process,
he got me to write a letter to my dad, and I always still cry till this day because that letter was our healing point, and I still have that letter that I wrote to him. When I read it to him, he told me to stop, and right then and there, that's when I knew our relationship was something more. And it was, that's when the point of intergenerational trauma and the impacts of residential school started coming up, because, and that's when I started seeing it come alive in my sobriety and understanding my past history. And yeah.
Did your family ever talk about residential school before that point?
No. No idea about residential school until I would say I was 18. There was no talk about it. It was pushed back. I remember like my grandma and my aunties talking about a school that they had to go to, but that was about it. When I went back from school from Vancouver, I would say in 2011 or 2012, I still had, like, that, I would say, young mind frame of knowing it all and wanting to still go out and party and be a part of, like, a big social group. And but the current job that I had was working with children, mm-hmm. and I knew I hated showing up to work hungover and not being able to be there for the children and right. not being able to give it my all. And through that process, I really started focusing and wanting to reach out for more help. I would say the children were my driving force to sobriety, and I'm so thankful each day that I still be able to get to work with them. It was really, really hard going into work and feeling like I wasn't being able to be present for them. And so...
Did you feel like they could sense it
almost? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm. I felt like they could sense it in me, and I'm still extremely close with those group of children that I taught at that age, mm-hmm. of my, I would say, my transformation.
Well, I'm so glad that you were able to stick with it. And when you decided to reach out for more help and change your lifestyle, was it really hard to explain to friends here when everybody else is going out and still really young and doing, you know, that sort of lifestyle? Was it hard to explain to them why you wanted to do something different, and were they supportive?
I would say it was really hard because I was 22, mm. so it was extremely hard. But my friends were very supportive. The community was very supportive of my sobriety, and I really wanted to vocalize that. And I would say, like, going out and knowing, like, the bartenders or people at Gertie's, and them knowing that I was sober was really keeping me accountable to myself and also my friends. And they always knew that they had, like, a sober drive home late at night.
Did you have a rock bottom moment that made you completely shift everything, or was it just a slow over time progression?
I would say my biggest rock bottom moment, and this is me being very vulnerable, I was partying in Vancouver. I don't even really remember where, but it was really ghetto. And my rock bottom moment was I was out using all night. And I didn't really come to and realize until I was partying with, like, a pregnant lady. And I saw her pregnant, and she was using as well. And I was just, like, called the cab. Jumped in the cab, and I was just like, what am I doing with my life? Why am I, if my parents see me like this, oh my God. So I'd say that was the hardest part of actually it coming to, like, my viewpoint and seeing it.
When you decided to stop, did you do any sort of 12-step programs, or did you go out for treatment?
No, I did it all on my own. Mm-hmm. I hated AA. Mm-hmm. I went to one AA meeting. I was like, what the... Mm-hmm. I mean, it suits some people, For sure. It did not suit me mm-hmm. at all. And then I just talked with a counselor very regularly, like a few times a week, just to hold me accountable. Mm-hmm. And being able to, like, smudge and connect with my Grandma Peggy... Taking her out for drives and just being able to hang out with her all the time was really helped me stay focused at the beginning of my sobriety.
Did she talk to you a lot about your sobriety, or was it just having her there?
Having her presence there and her knowing and understanding and always reassuring me that I'm on the right path. I really miss her every day, so it's just really hard.
What are your forms of connection now?
Oh, my family, my son, and my partner. My partner is very supportive of my sobriety. He doesn't really like to say it very often, and I know it's his story to tell, but he also hasn't drank for the past, I'd say, 2 years. And we really are on the same page that we want to raise our son, Wade, in a very healthy living environment.
When do you suggest that people should start talking to their kids about addiction?
I'd say normalizing it a lot more, talking about intergenerational trauma through residential schools and how that impacts our day-to-day living as an Indigenous people. Mm. Talking to the children at a young age is, you know, you don't really have to talk to them about, like, drugs and alcohol. You can talk to them about the intergenerational trauma that mm-hmm. comes from using drugs and alcohol. You don't really have to talk about the use of it, mm-hmm. particularly. Children are very smart. They know at a very young age. I think being open and talking about those things with our next generation coming up will be the turning point of breaking the cycle of intergenerational trauma mm-hmm. in our healing. So I think it's having the right language and telling them about it.
In sobriety, what would you say you're most grateful for today?
No hangovers. No, I'm so grateful to wake up with, like, a clear conscious mm-hmm. of knowing that I worked on myself. I struggled with depression, anxiety, and self-esteem. Mm. Self-esteem was a big one, and knowing that I worked on that part of my life has really helped in the process. I'm grateful every day because then I have a healthy family. My son doesn't have to be a part of that lifestyle. Mm-hmm. He can have a healthy childhood, I'd say, and then knowing that the intergenerational trauma has broken.
Thank you for listening. If you or someone you know is struggling with addiction, you can get help by calling the Yukon Government Mental Wellness and Substance Use Services at 1-866-456-3838 or by reaching out to Theki Anate Fly Like an Eagle Program at 867-333-2497. If you would like to share your story on this podcast, please email recoverystoriesyukon@gmail.com.